Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody. Second hour here on Sports Daily. KFH tonight has Butler basketball, the number 11 Grizzlies hosting Cloud County. You can hear it 7:15 right here on 97.5, 1240 KFH over the air, or you can go online and listen at kfhradio.com or on the free Odyssey app. You can also find this show in podcast form on the Odyssey app. You can also leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app, one of the great ways to listen to the show. We appreciate everybody who's in their car listening to us here over the air on the radio, on the Odyssey app, and who's watching us on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, all kinds of different ways to get in touch with the program. You can leave us comments there. You can tweet right at us. We'll get to those as we make our way through. It is Jake Balbrock, Tommy Kester, TJ Cleland today. We've been talking about a lot of things in the first hour. KU loses. If you missed anything on our KU conversation, you can go back and listen to that. We were talking before the break about the Chiefs, Jalen Watson coming back. Rick chimes in, says, I heard a podcast on the Chiefs that says Watson might play but would be limited and on a snap count. Maybe. I don't know. And the Chiefs aren't going to say that. I don't know how anybody does know that. All I know is he's practicing in full, not limited, and he's there. So for in whatever capacity, he's there, and he hasn't been, so he should help them out. TJ said something, Tommy, before we went to break that's interesting. There has been a large portion of this season where people have felt like the Chiefs weren't as good as a number one seed, had been getting lucky. I do wonder, though, do you think anybody's still saying that? Because they have been much better lately. And maybe if people are only focusing on the way that they played the Broncos, if you're foolish enough to subscribe to that being a real game. But if you go back, like their last month or so, they've been playing much better as they've been getting healthier. I'm not sure people, maybe next round, maybe people think that the Ravens and or the Bills are better. But I don't know that anybody's sleeping on the Chiefs like they were 2 months ago.
Yeah, I don't think that they are. And, you know, you go back and you look at who they played in the last month or so. I mean, even the Broncos game, which, of course, they played their backups. The Broncos were a playoff team. The Steelers were a playoff team. The Texans obviously are a playoff team. Their last three games were against AFC playoff games. They went 2-1 in those three games, and the one that they lost, they played their backups. They beat the Texans by more than a touchdown. Remember the Christmas Day game where they blew out the Steelers, who were at the beginning of that slide, but the Steelers on Christmas Day were not perceived as the Steelers that just lost and blown out by the Ravens last weekend in the wild card round, right? So I think the Chiefs beating the Steelers by 19 on Christmas Day, that at the time, that was something that everybody was like, wow, like the Steelers were, I mean, they had, I think that was what, maybe the second game of their losing streak that the Steelers had. So the perception was a lot different then. They've had quality wins against good opponents, against playoff teams in the last month or so. And it hadn't been that really razor thin margin of victory where it's like one thing that could have gone a different way and the outcome would have been different for Kansas City. Like, again, they beat the Texans by more than a touchdown the week before Christmas, and they beat the Steelers by 19 on Christmas Day to wrap up the number one seed. So yeah, they've played a lot better and they've been able to expand that margin of victory also.
Yeah, it's been bigger margins for sure, TJ. I think a lot of it is, A, getting healthy. But there's other things besides that. Joe Tooney has been, although not amazing, a much better option at left tackle. Xavier Worthy has evolved and blossomed into a really, really important weapon in this offense and has really opened up Mahomes' ability to not get sacked. And I still don't think we've seen the full workload of Isaiah Pacheco that we may see in the postseason. I'm not sure about that one because I think Andy Reid may love this quick passing game. But I do think there was some preservation of Isaiah Pacheco happening late in the year to keep him fresh for this spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a thing. I think that it's either that or we talked to, you know, Dan Angel the other day. He doesn't know who they're going to play, Kareem or Isaiah Pacheco, to be the kind of bell cow, I guess, is the way to think about it.
Yeah, don't you think Pacheco's the better option, by the way, on that? I mean, he's so much more explosive than Hunt. Hunt's been, I don't want to take anything away from Hunt. Say, he's helped save great. Their season, but he's not what Isaiah Pacheco at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great problem to have. I think that I really expect this game. I think the Chiefs are going to win this game, so I think that you have an opportunity to experiment with that a bit. You know, I think that, you know, it might be a split-rep game. I bet that they'd get, honestly, about the same amount of carries in this game, I imagine, what they'll do. So, but as you said, I think that it is a completely different team that we've seen from the beginning of the year, and I think that part of that, too, is, you know, the beginning of the year was a different team than we saw in the playoffs last year. I think that they were learning. They had Xavier Worthy, who's the fastest player in combine history, and they didn't know how to use him, I felt like. You know, they kept throwing, you know, Hail Marys, for lack of a better term, deep to him, and I don't think they've connected on one of them all year long. Maybe like one, like 40-yard gain, I think, against the Chargers, if I remember right, actually, back in like week four. But, you know, that's not who he ended up being. You know, he's really great in the, you know, jet sweeps, in the screenplays. And he's a great receiver. He's blossomed into. And I think that they've just continually learned how to use him and continually learned how to use, you know, Joe Tooney left tackle. They've continually learned how to use wherever all the new pieces fall. And I think that they're finally the good amount of familiarity with this team and what they're doing.
What's interesting, Tom, you brought up that the Chiefs have played these playoff teams lately. The Chiefs have played all of these playoff teams. Like, they've played all of them. And so you go back and you see the game against Buffalo, and like the game against, I don't even know, honestly, that you can take anything away from that game because of who was out on the field, right? DeAndre, I think they had just gotten DeAndre Hopkins. Worthy had a nice game, but I think they missed on a connect. Like, it's not the same team. And that's the thing about the Chiefs. They were 15-1, and they are at their best now. It's not even the same team we saw early. So the team that was getting lucky in all of these games against the Falcons and the Bengals and the Chargers and the Broncos and all, that's not what this team currently is. It's not even close.
You look at the injury report this week, too. The only player that was limited was Mecole Hardman, who's currently on injured reserve. That was it. Everybody else was a full participant, including Jalen Watson. You contrast that with a Texans team that has been beat up. They played a week ago, and they're going to be going into this game a little bit more, actually a lot more shorthanded than the Chiefs will be. Like, Shaq Mason is not expected to play for the Texans. Joe Mixon was limited in practice yesterday, and so that's something that definitely bodes watching as the week continues. I'm sure he'll be out there, but who knows how effective he'll be. Al-Shahir, after returning from his suspension that he had late in the season, he was a limited participant for the Texans. So they're definitely dealing with more things than what Kansas City is right now. And, you know, so again, not taking anything away from the talent level that Houston has. They're in the playoffs for a reason. They won a playoff game for a reason, all of that. But they don't have the luxury to have the kind of rest and, you know, be able to get healthy like Kansas City's been able to.
And to their credit, they've overcome, TJ, their own high amount of adversity this year. They really have. I don't like, they've got the house money effect here. Nobody on the planet is giving them a chance. but I don't want to forget about two things: the rust and the level of defense the Chiefs must play early to make sure that rust doesn't hurt them. And the Chiefs' offensive line still isn't good at the tackle spot in either spot. Like, whether it's Tooney or Humphreys or whatever they do, like, Tooney's been so much better in it. Like, unbelievable job by him to just be better, but they're still not good there. And the Texans do have elite level pass rushers. So that's it. Like, if you're looking for that thing, I think that's the place you look. Is we knew for much of this season, the Chiefs offensive line was 100% a bad liability, and they are one bad play away from one of those pass rushers getting to Mahomes and something bad happening. Still, like, that dynamic still exists. You just hope that the Chiefs are more equipped to deal with it now. And they are. They're more equipped to deal with it now than they were 2 months ago.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think I brought it up on Sports Sunday talking to Brandon about this matchup, that you think back to December 21st, whenever these teams played back then. And, you know, the Texans were a feared team. They were going to be the winners of their division and pose a bunch of problems for the Chiefs. And that was the one where you looked at the Chiefs schedule at week 8 or whatever of who can beat this team. And it was the Texans are really going to give them fits. And turned out it wasn't going to be that. And they went on a bit of a slide. But right now it feels like it's that conversation again. It's every reason that the Texans were kind of feared in the regular season. It's going to happen in this postseason. Their pass rush is awesome, and the Chiefs' offensive line is not awesome. I think that's the biggest thing that you can look at in this game, that they could give Mahomes fits. He hasn't been hit in a while. You know, he hasn't played in a month. But even during that span, he didn't get hit for quite a bit. He didn't get sacked, at least. So I think that it depends on what offensive line we're going to see, but I think that if there's a team that could turn the Chiefs back into the old Chiefs back in the early season, I think that it could be the Texans. They got a really good pass rush. Yeah.
Tommy, do you remember real quick how many sacks the Texans had against the Chiefs in that game?
Did they get to Mahomes at all?
One time.
I was trying to think back to, I mean, they did a good job. And again, we talked about this yesterday at length, you and I did, about how Kansas City has combated that and pass rush, where it hasn't been exceptional play from the ends of the line. It's been getting the ball out quickly. It's been the quick strike offense and then leaning more on the running game. That's really what's worked.
It's been a lot of Xavier Worthy, honestly. Like, his development, like the timeline of his development, I don't think is a coincidence in that parallel of when the Chiefs stopped allowing Mahomes to get sacked 5 times a game. Like, as he's ascended and become this, you know, dynamic. It's not, and that's the thing. It's not just jet sweeps and screens and bombs anymore. Like, he's running all kinds of routes out there. That's the part I think that is now, because now you've got to try to stop that and Hopkins and Kelsey and Gray and everything else. That's been the big help. We'll talk to PJ Glasser about it next, see what he thinks. Is he giving the Texans a chance here? We'll talk about that next on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
The commercials are over.
Dude, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
He's on the line now. He's the host of Send It In, an Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, to PJ Glasser. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the Send It In podcast. For more analysis, search Send It In wherever you find your podcasts, like on the Odyssey app. PJ, welcome in. Happy divisional round. Happy national championship. We got a big and maybe the best weekend of football of the year coming up.
And I know it's a big week, and we got a 3-man crew working, right? So
that's right.
This is what it's all about, fellas. Yeah, I think it's the best week of the year in football. You add the national championship in with these 4 games, it's going to be awesome.
I want to jump ahead. Let's start in college football. Let's jump ahead there first and talk about that national championship game. We were talking in our first hour about the incredible troll job Lou Holtz is trying to pull right now on Ryan Day in Ohio State. I got to tell you, 8.5 points doesn't feel like enough to me for Notre Dame. I don't know how they're going to score in this game. What are you reading on this one?
I'm with you. And it was at 9.5 early on and then went down to 8.5. And I really don't understand the move down. I like Ohio State in the game, you guys. Look, I think it's a big concern for Notre Dame that they barely survived Penn State, and Penn State didn't complete a single pass to a wide receiver. And now you're going up against Ohio State, who's got the best crop of receivers in the country. I also think it's a terrible matchup for Notre Dame's defense, because they love to play man defense across the board, right? And like, that's what's got you to this point. That's what made your defense so good. So is like Marcus Freeman all of a sudden going to tell his team that just because we are facing great receivers and a great team that we're not going to do that anymore? So I think Notre Dame's going to stay true to who they are. They're going to play, you know, man coverage on the outside and against Jeremiah Smith and Amika Bukum and Carnell Tate. Like, good luck with that. So I think from just a like game plan and matchup standpoint, it's not a good one for Notre Dame. And then offensively, you know, the Irish obviously are a team that want to run the football and they want to grind you down and they want to control time possession, and against this Ohio State defense, that's going to be tough to do. So matchup wise, I've liked the matchup for Notre Dame up to this point. Indiana, Georgia, Penn State, all these teams don't really have dynamic offenses. Notre Dame can play their game. They can suffocate them with their defenses. Can't really do that against Ohio State. I think the argument to be made for Notre Dame is the fact that Ohio State has struggled this year, obviously, against Michigan, against Nebraska, against Penn State. All those games were lower scoring, and Ohio State has struggled. Problem is, the Ohio State team that we have seen in the playoff, they've opened it up on offense, and they've gone much more spread, and they're starting to use their receivers. So maybe this game was played like 5-6 weeks ago when Ohio State was, you know, going about their ways offensively, it'd be a different story. But nowadays, in the national championship, fellas, I think 8.5 is a good bet with Ohio State.
You know, certainly, PJ, as far as the over-under is concerned, as of right now, most books have it around 46.5 for that total. To me, it seems a little bit like the books are anticipating Notre Dame maybe being able to do a little bit defensively to shut down, maybe not shut down Ohio State, but maybe slow them down, maybe early in the game or whatever. I don't know if that's the right read on it or not. I know you don't like Notre Dame's defense. Where do you feel this total is going?
Tommy, I totally agree with you. If you like Notre Dame in the game, I think it correlates to the under, because yeah, the three games I was just talking about, Michigan beat Ohio State 13-10, Penn State lost 20-13, Nebraska lost 21-17, right? All three of those games within one possession, all three of those games under 46.5, that's going to be Notre Dame's plan of attack to try and keep this game close or pull off the upset. So if it's Ohio State, you know, it could go either way. Like, they could win a 31-7 game. They could win 38-20. Like, I could see a couple different things. But for Notre Dame, I really can't see them keeping it close with Ohio State and the game being a shootout. I think their path to victory or their path to keeping it close is a lower scoring game. So I think this is one of those bets, guys. If you like the Irish, I would correlate it with the under.
PJ, I'm wondering in this national championship, you got a lot of offensive stars between the two teams. You know, you got any darts to throw at the dartboard? Who you see scoring in this game, you know, with the two Jeremiahs, Will, Riley, Quinshon, you know, do you think it's going to be a bunch of stars leading the way for this game?
Probably will be. I certainly think, TJ, the better bet is to go with an Ohio State guy because they're more likely to score. I've been betting all postseason Amika Abuka to find the end zone at plus 145 because everybody talks about Jeremiah Smith, and rightfully so. But Abuka is also fantastic, and he could be a first-round wide receiver. And especially in these big games like this, when Ohio State faces good defenses, Abuka is usually the guy in the red zone. You know, Jeremiah Smith is like the big play receiver. He's the home run hitter. Once they get in the red area, though, and they need the tough yardage or they need third down conversions or something like that, Abuka's the guy. So I love his price, you know, in all these games because all the attention's on Smith. They got two great running backs. Will Howard can run a little bit as well. Feels like the best value is always on Abuka. So I always like him at plus 145. And then Riley Leonard, if you're going to bet somebody on Notre Dame, he would be the guy also at plus 125. Ohio State's defense is really tough to just break off big touchdowns. You're going to have to work your way down the field. And when Notre Dame gets in the red zone, especially inside the five, they really use Riley Leonard in that area. So I think Leonard for Notre Dame, Abuka for Ohio State would be my two looks.
All right, let's go to the NFL, PJ. We'll take them game by game up first. The Chiefs, the team we're following closely. For 3 days now, we've been talking about it. I can't find the path for Houston. I know it's a big line, but man, this feels like a great spot for the Chiefs. 8.5 points, though. Are you comfortable with that, or where is your feel for this one?
Yeah, if I had to bet the game, I think I would take Kansas City -8.5. I'm honestly surprised this game hasn't gotten to 9 yet, because this feels like the ultimate teaser, right? You just tease them down to 2.5 and you could bet it that way. But even at the 8.5, I think Kansas City is a good bet. I mean, like you, Jacob, it's going to be tough for the Texans to score in this game, right? I know these teams played about 3-4 weeks ago, and Houston was competitive, and they were up in that third quarter, and then the Tank Dell injury just kind of changed everything. And, you know, you watch Houston since then, they've obviously struggled, and it's the Chiefs in the postseason, right? And it's Spags in the postseason, and just really, you got to take away Nico Collins, and after that, let everybody else beat you. So they should be able to control the ground game with Joe Mixon, should be able to limit Nico Collins' touches, and then after that, kind of just let, you know, C.J. Stroud try and throw it to other guys to beat you. So if I had to make a bet in the game, I do like Kansas City. The angle that I like in this game, guys, and you might have to shop around to find this bet, but I like Kansas City opening drive touchdown. It's like plus 270 at most shops. My theory is that all of us are going to watch this game, right? And obviously with the Ravens-Bills showdown that's happening, and a lot of people feel like the winner of that game maybe could go to the Super Bowl. I feel like with this being the first game up, we haven't seen the Chiefs starters since Christmas. There's been all this talk about how overrated they've been and what, you know, how much of a fraud they are this season as a 15-win team. I could just see them opening up the game just on a beautiful drive going right down the field. Kelce gets a couple of touches. Mahomes looks great. Pacheco a couple runs. And we're just all sitting there going like, oh God, they're going to win it again, aren't they? Right? Like, here we go. Three-peat on its way. So I kind of like that angle. I think the Chiefs are going to start really fast in this game. So I like attacking them first quarter, first drive, those kind of things.
You know, this is the first time, really, PJ, that the Chiefs have had their full complement of offensive weapons, really outside of Rashee Rice, on the field. And so it might make it a little bit more difficult to figure out exactly where the distribution is going to go to, as you know, as it relates to pass catchers or even running backs with Pacheco and Hunt. But then you've got DeAndre Hopkins and Travis Kelce and, you know, Worthy. Hollywood Brown is back. How in the world, at least when it comes to Kansas City, do you look at the player prop market in this game?
It's tough, Tommy. You know, I'm going to be honest. I really haven't done too much with Kansas City props in this game for that exact reason, right? Because this is really the first time we've seen him this healthy outside of Rice. And just because it's the playoffs and now Kansas City is really going to lock in and focus, immediately your attention turns to Kelce. That would be the guy that you would think would benefit the most from the playoffs just because of all the years with Mahomes and how good they tend to be in these kind of games. If I had to pick a guy maybe that I would buy stock in right now, it would be Xavier Worthy. I think he's the difference maker for this team with his speed and the different ways that they can get him the ball. So Kelce over 53.5 receiving yards. If I had to make a bet on a skill position player, he would be the guy. But I tend to think throughout this postseason run, and if the Chiefs want to get the three-peat, I think Worthy's going to need to be the guy for him.
Going to the NFC, the other game on Saturday, you know, the Commanders get into that divisional round, but they get the Lions. How much stock do you buy in Jaden Daniels and the Commanders? Are they a good enough team to win this game, or are they a good enough team to cover 9?
It's going to be a heck of a game, guys. This is a tough one, right? Because it's one of these bets where, like, when you get to this time of the year and the lines are so sharp and it feels too big, generally the favorites tend to cover. But man, it's tough to bet against Jaden Daniels with all those points. It really is. That kid just finds ways to win games every week. He finds ways to keep his team in the game. If you're asking me who I would bet, I would take Detroit, though. It feels like Washington is kind of this like team of destiny vibe, right? They had the Hail Mary against Chicago, failed two-point conversion against the Saints. Devontae Smith drops the pass when they're playing the Eagles. Last week, you get the fumble from Banker, and then the kicker doinks in the field goal. So Washington kind of feels like this team of destiny. The problem is, when you get this team of destiny type vibe, eventually you just run into a team that's just too good, right? Like NC State men's basketball had a great run in the tournament. Then they run into Zach Edey and Purdue. The New York Mets in baseball, it felt like they had destiny vibes. Then they run into the Dodgers and they go home. Kind of feels like the same thing for Washington. It just feels like you're facing a different beast. You're facing a different animal offensively. So I kind of like the Lions in the game. I will say a prop that I like quite a bit in this game is Terry McLaurin longest reception over 23.5 yards. We know Detroit likes to be aggressive. They like to bring pressure. They like to play man defense. And if Jaden Daniels sees that, he's going to go to his guy on the outside. McLaurin's one of the best deep ball receivers, one of the best contested catch receivers in the NFL. So I like that look for him as well. Washington's going to have to run the ball in this game. They had no run game against Tampa. They got to stay balanced and they got to stay on the field to try and maintain drives so they can keep the Lions offense off the field. Wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the Commanders cover just because it's a lot of points, but I would lean towards Detroit.
All right, let's look at Rams-Eagles. Are the Rams the team that nobody's talking enough about? The Rams can beat the Eagles. Can't they? 6 points? I don't know, man. That's tough.
They could beat the Eagles, Jacob, but you got to remember again that this is the Rams outdoors. This is Stafford outdoors. And more importantly, it's the Rams outdoors in cold weather. And that's a big concern for me. This has obviously been a guy who's been a dome quarterback his entire career, right? Whether it was with Detroit or whether it's with the Rams. And guys, it's insane to look back at what the Rams have done over their last four games when their starters have played. Their defense has not given up more than 10 points, right? So against Minnesota, they only gave up 9. Against Arizona, they gave up 9. The Jets, they gave up 9. And then that Thursday night game against San Francisco, they gave up 6. The problem is, in a lot of those games, they failed to reach 20 points as well. And in the game against the Jets, where it was freezing cold, they scored 19. And in the game against San Francisco, where it was raining, they only were able to score 12 points, only scored one touchdown in both of those games. So that's my concern for the Rams, you know, and obviously these teams played back in Thanksgiving week on Sunday Night Football. Philly beat them 37-20. Saquon had a massive day on the ground, and I think that's the same plan of attack. Minnesota, obviously, they were trailing right away, and they just kind of got into trail mode, and they were throwing, and that Rams D-line just kind of, you know, they pinned their ears back, and they got 9 sacks on Darnold. Philly's not going to do that. They're going to run the ball. They're going to lean on their defense. I kind of see this game being similar to what the Green Bay game was, like 22-10, 23-12, like some funky score like that. Rams team total under is my favorite play in the game, under 19.5. The Rams certainly could cover. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, but the thing I feel best about is the Rams really struggling to put up points outdoors in, you know, cold temperatures, could be raining, could be snowing against Philly, so I like the team total under.
All right, one more. Your Ravens, the big one, the one everyone's been waiting for, the one everyone's been talking about. They're actually road favorites in this game, which I imagine as a fan, you don't love hearing those kinds of things. But you know, where do you stand in this game? There's going to be a lot made of the quarterbacks, as there should be. Can Lamar finally have that big playoff game?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to need to. And they're going to need to keep feeding Derrick Henry. I can tell you guys this. The Ravens, if their game plan is the same against the Steelers as it is against Buffalo, they're going to win the game. I've been waiting for a game plan like that for 6 years. Just run the ball and keep running. And if they can't stop it, run it again. They had one drive, guys, where they ran 13 runs and 0 passes, and they scored a touchdown, and it was just beautiful. And that's why they brought Derrick in. So I think he's the difference maker, because with him in the backfield, you know that you can't abandon the run. You have to lean on him. They're calling for cold temperatures, looking like we're getting a 50% chance of snow. And I actually think that benefits the Ravens, because Sure. Even though the Bills are supposed to be a team that's built to play in that stuff, the Ravens are the best running team in the NFL. So I think that's a big advantage for them. Also, guys, Josh Allen in his career against the Ravens has really never played them well. Played them 4 times, and he's never thrown for more than 215 passing yards. And I know a lot of people are talking about the Bills' defense is going to be a lot different when the Ravens face him in the playoffs on Sunday, opposed to when they faced him in Week 4. Well, the Ravens' defense is going to be a lot different too. Baltimore's pass defense was one of the worst in the NFL early on in the season. Now they're playing one of the best. They're playing as one of the best defenses. So both defenses are going to be different, but the Ravens is also going to be way different. And Allen already tends to struggle with the Ravens to begin with. Buffalo against Denver did such a good job running the ball on first down. It felt like they were consistently living in second and three, second and four. And when you got Josh Allen in that down and distance, it's impossible to stop him. Ravens have the number one run defense in the NFL. To me, that's the story of the game. Can Buffalo manufacture any kind of early down running with James Cook? Can they stay ahead of the chains? That'll be the big story to me of the game, if Buffalo's able to run the ball. If not, I think the Ravens are going to take it. So I like the Ravens to win this game. Jacob, you mentioned that, you know, probably as a Ravens fan, I don't love the fact that they're favored on the road in Buffalo, but I kind of look at it as a thing of like, Buffalo's 9-0 at home this season. This is the first time ever that the Bills are an underdog in a home playoff game. I don't know. Kind of feels like the sports books are telling you something. So I like the Ravens in the game.
Yeah, maybe into your, like, don't have the same game plan, Harbaugh, that you had against the Chiefs last year in the postseason.
Exactly.
That would be the one. All right, PJ, we appreciate it. We're up against it. Thank you. Enjoy the football weekend. We're with you. We think it'll be the best one yet.
You guys as well. Thanks for having me. Talk to you next week.
Let's all make some money. That was the host of Send It In, an Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, PJ Glasser, Insider Calls presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Kind of crazy as we go, listening to, you know, that with that game and the total to still be at 51.5. Both of those defenses are good. Both of those teams want to run the ball. They may have to. It's bad weather. That total still at 51.5.
I think it just shows the credit and the respect that the books are giving to both of those offenses, both of those quarterbacks, and the playmakers that they've got.
And the quarterbacks that 100%. DJ could take off and house call it at any given point in that game.
Yeah, I hope the over hits. I hope that they score 80 points. I want to see
Me too. Awesome game in this one. I'm team offense for Absolutely. Sure. All the totals really are pretty high. That you got two really high ones and two pretty low ones, actually. The Chiefs play the lowest total, 41.5. Let that sink in. That's pretty crazy. We're going to have Tim Fitzgerald. He's up early with us this morning. How much heat should Jerome Tang be taking? We'll check in from Manhattan with our K-State insider next.
Take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, TJ Cleland, and Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. Go PowerCat.com, at Life of Fitz on social. We got Daphne the dog here with us as well, Fitz, to bring in some reinforcements.
Yep.
Welcome in to, you know, to
Look Sports at this. Daily.
We appreciate it. Thanks for
being
here.
Everyone. Everyone together.
The whole gang is here with nothing but good things to talk about. Surely we don't need to get into the fact that K-State's the worst team in the net in the Big 12. Surely we don't need to get into the fact that they still don't have a high-quality win. You can count Cincinnati if you want schedule. Four losses in a row. Five minutes?
Mississippi Valley State.
Yeah. 5 minutes of basketball, game minutes, not real minutes, game minutes without scoring the other night.
They're trying to make it difficult on themselves.
Can't generate any offense. Fitz, how big picture here? Because small picture, I don't think anybody anymore can see a path to much success this season. Are we to the point where the big picture stuff starts entering the equation? I think we are, aren't we? We're worried about this thing, big picture.
Oh yeah. This is they got a lot of really delicious ingredients for the soup, and the soup is crap. This hasn't worked, and we're seeing NIL purchase teams around the country fail too, or maybe not as gloriously as Kansas State, but this isn't working, and it's almost like hired guns aren't loyal to you and just want to be paid. I think this is good for college basketball. I'd hate that Kansas State's going through it, but I like the idea that you can't just go buy a team and be successful. Even though that cheat code was used at Kansas State, everyone thought it would work. It hasn't worked. And after the last game, Jerome Tang announced that we're going to start worrying about the future, and only the guys who really want to be on the court and earn it in practice are going to be on the court. And he played some guys that haven't played a lot of minutes this year, including point guard David Castillo in the crunch time. And he's decided we got to get him that experience for the future, because that's basically what they have left this season, is the future.
That final 5 minutes against Texas Tech, I feel like, was kind of the microcosm of the way that this season has been for the Wildcats. Where, I mean, for a large portion of that game, they were in it. They played really well. They had a stretch in the first half where they, you know, went on an 11-0 run and turned an 8-point deficit into a 3-point lead. But in the crunch time, when it mattered the most, the offense disappeared. Now, credit to Tech and their suffocating defense in that regard. But to me, it kind of sums up the way that this team has been basically this entire season. When it matters most, especially the guys that are being paid to deliver, haven't been able to deliver.
Yeah, exactly. This team really hasn't ever known what its identity is in those moments. When it needs a basket, what does it do? Their plan, and I put this on the coaches as much as anyone, the plan at the end of the games apparently is point guard, race up the court and shoot the ball. It doesn't matter if it's a good shot, just shoot it. And that isn't working. That worked when your point guard was Marquise Noel, but it's not working now. And it didn't work last year very often. And I think they've now realized that they have to approach this entirely differently. And the difference with how they lost the other night to Texas Tech was, they went scoreless the last 550 of that game. But Tech only scored 4 points. So in the past, let's be honest, the opponent would have scored like 16 points and it had been a blowout. Yeah, that's where we're at right now. We're taking these little victories within the losses as hopeful signs, maybe, that they're improving. I thought they were much better defensively. They were much better with their effort. They weren't particularly better offensively, which has usually meant they get blown out. So I take away some encouragement, and I'm happy that Jerome Tang has decided we're going to just keep going forward into next season. We've got to get this roster ready, because this plan obviously isn't working. We're going to have to shift over to maybe the way we did it before with the two plans melded together. And it's going to be a process. You know what that means, guys? They're not going to be very good next year because they're going to try to go get some young players and start doing this the right way. But Jerome Tang has that time because he just signed a new contract that Kansas State absolutely cannot afford to buy out in the era of revenue sharing that is coming in the fall. You've already got $22 million allocated for student athletes. You can't pay another almost $20 million out to buy out a coach. So that just isn't a reality. And I'd say in any of the schools in this area, you can't do that. So they're trying to make the best of a horrific situation of their own creation.
Fitz, I'm wondering, you know, you look at social media, you look at the stands the other night, you know, it wasn't a packed house, and fans are talking with their money, fans are talking on social media, you know, bald guys in Manhattan are pretty disgruntled right now as well, too, but, you know, what's the vibe of this Kansas State? Is there any hot water? You know, we hear Coach Tang go on the press conference, and he's such an optimist, you wouldn't really think anything's going on. Is there something behind the scenes that you think that Kansas State's talking to Jerome Tang? Just kind of what's the university handling this like?
You know, honestly, I don't think there's anything going on behind the scenes, because I'm sure Gene Taylor's talked to him a little bit, and maybe they've fleshed out this plan to move forward. I don't know. Gene's not that kind of hands-on guy. He intervenes when it needs to be done, and I think the entire K-State world that is plugged in knows that nothing can be done contractually right now. But the fans are voting. And the students are out, so that impacted the crowd quite significantly. I mean, it's not like there's a giant metro area that can fill in those areas for a weeknight game. So those weeknight games during holiday breaks are always less attended, but filled in pretty well by locals taking advantage of ticket plans that they put out there so people can bring their kids to a game. Fearing being accused of child abuse, I don't think many people brought their kids to the game. Nobody wants to lose their children because they expose them to Kansas State basketball.
It's a form of punishment.
That would be hard to explain. But I think a lot of people that would normally go just decided it's cold out. I'm not going. And those deterrents don't work when you're winning. They'll climb a mountain to get to you if they've got a seat in a winning arena.
Fitz, let's talk some football. Let's brighten this up a little bit here. Tell us about, look, I've said it a million times, not qualified to follow the transfer portal. Don't have the energy. Don't really, quite frankly, know how to do it very well. I can go to the sites and see that K-State's kind of down there. Are they happy with what they've done? Did they need to do as much in the portal as some of these teams higher on the list?
No. I like K-State football's approach to the portal for where K-State is in the hierarchy of college football. They turn their NIL inwards. They keep players like Jace Brown, who is being courted by other programs, who was seriously considering leaving. Of course, we don't know what the offer was, but he's still at K-State. So they keep their core pieces as best they can. They really never suffered the outgo from the portal that other programs have. They've never had mass exodus of key players. That just hasn't happened. And when that happens, you have to go find answers in the portal. So K-State's able to use the portal very selectively. Some guys are a more urgent need, and a lot of this is just filling in the roster. They got three receivers to all come compete in the receiver room, but they're not throwing, I don't know what the price for a receiver is because I'm so overshadowed by basketball prices that are just ridiculous. But they're not paying $250,000 to a receiver that I know of that have come in. They're just not going to do that. They're doing the exact opposite of basketball. They're trying to preserve their locker room as best they can by keeping a kind of a sensible hierarchy to who's getting paid and why. You got to earn it at K-State unless you really are someone they want to bring in and they can see you can help them immediately. They approach the portal differently. They're never going to be highly ranked, but boy, they're going to fill in all their spots that they need help with while retaining guys like Dylan Edwards, Avery Johnson, Jace Brown, just on offense. Austin Romain and so many others on defense. All players I know others would like to poach, and they haven't been able to.
Real quick, Fitz, before we let you go, let's go back to basketball really quick. Sunflower Showdown.
Really?
The first Sunflower Showdown of the season in Lawrence this weekend. Kansas, they're not world beaters, and there, I think, is a fairly clear formula on how to attack a team like the Jayhawks. It's just a matter of whether or not Kansas State has the firepower and the personnel to make it difficult on the Jayhawks and really taking away Hunter Dickinson, trying to find ways, to do that. And Kansas can't score at a high clip right now either. So I think this could be a closer game than maybe what people might initially think. Do you think the Wildcats have the recipe to at least be able to, find a way to get into what Kansas wants to do best?
They have the recipe. I'm not sure they'll do it. They've not played Hunter Dickinson. They have not played Coleman Hawkins on the interior like he did at Illinois. He's never lost to Hunter Dickinson because he was the guy covering him in the post most of the time. And that kind of athleticism and ability to drag him away from the basket on the other end gives him problems. I think part of why Coleman came to Kansas State is to be on the perimeter and not play the post. We'll see what they do. The formula is there. He has given him troubles throughout his career, but I don't know if they'll do it, probably because of promises made in the recruiting process. But at the end of the day, I don't think this team has the spirit or the, I don't want to say heart, but probably the collective oomph to beat a team like Kansas. When you're struggling to beat Oklahoma State, guys, I don't see you beating Kansas. I think this thing will be extremely ugly. I think it'll be a get-right game for KU, and they're going to get right by about 20 points over K-State.
Yeah, pissed off Kansas in Lawrence.
Yes.
Yeah. That's probably going to be a problem. All right, Fitz, you guys will have that game all covered. You've got the recruiting trail all covered, both hoops and, of course, football right now at Go Power Cat. Plenty for us there.
Yep, absolutely. We're trying something new with our podcasts too. We used to do like 1 hour long one a week. We do a lot of podcasts, but our main podcast was one a week. We decided to do about 320s a week because I am like the rest of you. I don't have the attention span of an hour. In fact, I don't have about 5 minutes, and dude wants to go outside, so I got to go.
Yeah, we lack attention spans. Fitz, that's all right. It's all right. Daphne's the boss.
Daphne laid down.
Oh, yeah, good.
Dude wants to go outside to drink the cold water.
Oh, okay. Well, Fitz, you go lay down. All right. It's you know, you go take a nap.
So early. Why are you doing this in the middle of the night now?
I know. It's I get it. We're all there. You should see TJ stroll in the morning this week.
So awake.
It's been a yeah. There you go. There you go. Yeah. All right, Fitz. We appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Boys.
Up against it. GoPowerCat.com or K-State Insider. Interesting. Big takeaway for me there is they can't afford to buy out Jerome Tang. And I believe it. I think we're going to see a little more of that, which is an interesting development in college sports as it pertains to some of the things that we follow. We'll soak in on that. We'll have more Sports Daily for you coming right back.